Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Monday, the 30th of September. Coming up, why more police are going to be on patrol in Herne Bay.
What the officer summarised it as is the total amount of crime in Herne Bay is going down, but the severity of them is going up.
A mum describes the terrifying moment her daughter had suffered a choking incident at nursery.
Getting that phone call was a real eye-opener. It was like a wake-up call almost.
And the incredible circus performer who will be in Kent this week despite suffering a life-changing injury.
From the day of my accident until now is a journey, I would say, from the height of the trapeze to the depth of despair.
First up today, though, we're going to start with a big story that broke over the weekend. Canterbury MP Rosie Duffield has announced she's quit the Labour Party. Now, she's been a critic of Sir Keir Starmer for some time now, but it seems the final straw was his acceptance of tens of thousands of pounds worth of free gifts from donors. Ms Duffield also didn't agree with the scrapping of winter fuel payments for millions of older people, and she made that quite clear at the time of a vote on it.
Awesome. Slogan for the general election campaign was change. It's starting to sound a lot as though our slogan should have been the same because we're doing the things that we fought against for so long.
Well, there's been plenty of reaction to Rosie Duffield's decision. Former MP Lord Craig McKinley posted on X over the weekend. He said, "Great decision, Rosie. Huge respect to you and best wishes." And Tory party leadership candidate Tom Tugendhat said, "Rosie Duffield is right. In less than 3 months, Labour's greed and sleaze has been exposed. Keir Starmer promised a government of service, but he's only serving himself." Now, Ms Duffield has been a Labour MP in Canterbury since 2017 and will now stand as an independent. Here's what people in her constituency think.
If he wants to take free gifts, what's the problem with that? Would you take a free gift? I certainly would.
To vote someone in on a Labour standpoint and then to stand independent, I think we probably are due a by-election.
Fair play to her. I mean, I think they do look a bit like hypocrites, don't they?
For me, she's more Conservative than Labour.
She's very brave.
And you can let us know what you think about this situation by heading to the Canterbury pages of Kent Online and commenting on the story. You can also leave a message on our socials.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today. An Amalgate man who stabbed two people in a nightclub brawl has told a judge he wants to prove he can be a better dad. Lucy's got the details for us for the podcast.
Well, the attack happened at Click Bar in Ramsgate in January this year. A court heard Jaden Cashin lashed out during a fight, leaving one man with multiple wounds. He also stabbed a bouncer who needed surgery for an injury to his bowel. Cashin was arrested 5 weeks later following a Kent police appeal and pleaded guilty to unlawful wounding and wounding with intent to cause GBH. He asked to be spared a prison sentence so he could have a chance to turn his life around and look after his 8-month-old daughter, but the judge described him as a man prone to using violence and said there was no excuse for taking a knife into a bar. The 23-year-old from Beatrice Road has been locked up for 4.5 years.
Thank you ever so much, Lucy. A person's been treated by paramedics after a fire at a flat near Gravesend. It broke out on Ebbsfleet Walk in the early hours of Sunday and is thought to have been accidental. 6 fire engines were also called to tackle a blaze in a building on Northfleet High Street yesterday evening. Advice to avoid the area has now been lifted. Meantime, people living on part of Sheppey have been told to keep windows and doors closed because of a barn fire. Crews were called to tackle the blaze on Laysdown Road in Eastchurch on Saturday. And residents have thanked firefighters who saved them from a fire at flats in Tunbridge Wells. People living in the Goodwins were woken in the early hours of Friday by crews hammering on their doors. Witnesses say an elderly man needed CPR and was taken to hospital by paramedics. Now, police have been given £15,000 so more officers can patrol Herne Bay. As stats show, it's the most dangerous part of the district. Bosses at Canterbury City Council have been told how the town centre and seafront in particular has become a violent crime hotspot. Well, a meeting's been held to discuss potential solutions. I've been speaking to our local democracy reporter Dan Essen and started by asking exactly where the details Wales had come from.
So basically, a meeting I was at a Canterbury Council the other week, they were talking about this thing, the Community Safety Partnership, which is basically Canterbury City Council and the police and various other organisations come together regularly to talk about crime. And essentially, the police have all these systems of categorising the amount of crime in an area and its relative severity. And basically, on their numbers, Herne Bay came up as pretty much the district's violent crime hotspot. It has less absolute volume of crime than other parts of Canterbury, or other parts of the district, rather, wards like Westgate in the middle of Canterbury. But it came, you know, per crime, there was an average higher harm score, which basically what the officer summarised it as is the total amount of crime in Herne Bay is going down, but the severity of them is going up, is what he said. And as such, Kent Police have got another 15 grand to put more bobbies on the beat, so to speak, to have more local police presence there.
So when we talk about violent crime, did they give you an idea of what they're actually talking about?
Yeah, so it's, I mean, even within the same crime, they categorise the harm of it in their like ranking system differently. So for example, like a small scuffle outside a pub will contribute less to that score than somebody getting stabbed. But something they particularly pointed out is that there are a few, you know, quite severe high-profile crimes in Herne Bay over the past sort of 6 months or so, which have contributed to that score being so high. Like in particular, there was a man who was attacked with a machete near the seafront, and it's things like that which contribute quite a lot to the high harm score they got.
Now, Dan, they particularly highlighted Heron Ward. I'm sure if you live in Herne Bay, you know exactly where that is. But for anyone who doesn't, can you describe that part for us?
Yes, but Heron Ward basically covers the what you would consider the town centre, the pedestrianised area with shops and businesses, and the seafront itself, sort of. And towards the edges, it's a bit more residential, but it's basically the town centre and the main drag at the seafront.
And you've been to Herne Bay. What have people said there about, well, firstly, crime rates, but also what do they think about more police patrols?
I got a mixed response. So speaking to people who live in the area, of maybe 20 people I spoke to out on the street, probably at least half of those when I said that police had described the area as a crime hotspot compared to the rest of the district. They were very surprised to hear it. A lot of them said, well, that's not been my experience. I spoke to one guy who'd lived in Herne Bay for all 74 years of his life and said that he didn't think it was particularly bad at all. On the other hand, I've spoken to some people, like local business owners, who said they think it's gotten a lot worse over previous years. And on the police presence, I mean, so some people are pretty supportive of it. They think it would be a deterrent, especially in the summer and in the evenings when the town centre and the seafront is a bit busier. But there's quite a few people who said to me that, is more police necessarily going to fix things? Because if people are committing crimes, yeah, there may be broader reasons in the town why, for example, young people are hanging around causing trouble rather than doing other things. So pretty mixed response, basically. But the main thing people said is that, you know, the police openly say that a large part of this, why it's considered to be why they have this higher harm score, is because of basically a small minority of repeat offenders, essentially, which begs the question, if you know who it is and they're repeat offending, why isn't it easy for the police to do something about it? And a lot of people were disappointed but not surprised to hear that that's the case.
Herne Bay relies on tourism. It's one of Kent's seaside towns. Obviously, it's really important to attract people to the area to spend money, especially in the summer. I'm guessing people don't want it to have a bad reputation, do they?
No, not at all. And it was something that the police officer in the council meeting was at pains to stress. He was like, you know, Herne Bay's not the Wild West by any imagination. It's just a bit worse than the rest of the district, or its numbers are skewed by a small number of quite high-profile crimes. And it was a concern of a few people I spoke to. They were like, you know, we don't want our town to be known as, some kind of crime hotspot, because it's not. And to them, they said it doesn't really feel like it. I mean, I spent the whole day walking around and I didn't see any crime, but yeah, maybe I wasn't looking hard enough, but it seemed fine to me.
Dan, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online reports.
A motorbike rider who wasn't expected to survive a serious crash in Broadstairs is making a miraculous recovery. Jordan Collins went into cardiac arrest and was left with a fractured skull and brain injuries following the collision near St Peter's Road in July. The 25-year-old is now out of intensive care in a London hospital and working on getting physically stronger. Former Souththanet MP Craig McKinley has shared footage of his recovery 12 months after losing his hands and feet to sepsis. The video posted on socials shows the bionic politician training in a gym. The 57-year-old is now campaigning for better aftercare for sepsis survivors. A mum says she's disappointed after her adult son with learning disabilities wasn't allowed into a cinema screening for toddlers in Ashford. Jill Brown tried to take 25-year-old William, who has cerebral palsy and is non-verbal, to see the Ruffalo's Child at the Ashford Cinema. They were refused entry, as staff said it was only for children aged 5 and under. The cinema has been contacted for a comment. Now, a Gravesend mum has described the terrifying moment she was told about her daughter choking on food at nursery. 3-year-old Bella had been eating some potato and thankfully back blows by staff managed to dislodge it. Well, Angela Chapman's now decided to raise money to buy the nursery a life vac, and she's been speaking about it to reporter Keely Greenwood.
I'd heard of the charity, obviously, and what had happened previously in incidents, and I kind of was familiar with life vac, but it was only my own incident when I got the call from my daughter Bella's nursery to say that she had a choking incident. But it actually really brought home to me, you know, how lucky I was, and if it wasn't for Emma's quick reactions, we could have had a very different story.
Was that a scary phone call? Oh gosh, yes.
I think, I mean, it was probably more scary for Emma because she was on the receiving end of it. I was probably very blissfully unaware until I got the phone call. So getting that phone call was a real eye-opener. It was like a wake-up call almost. And I thought, actually, you know, it would be really nice for this nursery to be able to have one. So I spoke to him and said, would you mind if I did a bit of fundraising in your name and obviously just get the funds for one life act for your nursery? And she was like, absolutely, that, you know, that would be amazing. And then obviously I got speaking to Lewis, who I understand is in touch with you guys regularly. You cover his sort of the Oliver Steeper Foundation. He was really helpful. So yeah, and it kind of went up from there, and we said, if we go above our target, which we already reached, any excess we get, we can either give to another nursery that's local that needs one, or he can have it for, because obviously that's what they do, that's what predominantly them guys do. So yeah, it literally, that was how it came about.
And so have they got it in the nursery now?
Not yet. So I only set this fundraiser up yesterday afternoon.
Oh, literally.
Yeah, literally yesterday afternoon, and by yesterday evening, we'd reached the full amount that we needed, obviously, to cover the life act, the postage, and then any fees that Just Give in charge. And then I thought, well, actually, let's let this run a bit more, just in case there's more awareness and people want to donate, and it can either go to the Oliver Steeper Foundation or a nursery nearby that also would like one that hasn't got one.
And yeah, you can also buy them, can't you? I didn't know that. Yes. You can buy them for your own home.
So I've bought one, actually, and that was my very first port of call. I thought, you know what? And she's been a bit of a pickle, Bella, for shoving too much in her mouth. And I'm terrified. She's done it once at home previously. Thankfully, it was not a proper choking incident at home. It was just a gag. I'm terrified she's going to do that again. And I thought, actually, no amount of money is, well, you don't put a price on it, do you?
Yeah.
I thought, I'm getting one, and I ordered one yesterday and it arrived this morning. And I've been in touch with Matt, who is the director of LifeVac. He's been super helpful, sent me the links of the CPD training, obviously the short video to learn how to use this correctly, obviously because it's to be used alongside initial first aid protocols first, and then this is a backup plan should first aid not work. So yeah, really important to be trained on that as well. So yeah, mine arrived already. I have it in my house.
The LifeVac equipment is promoted by the Oliver Steeper Foundation, named in memory of 9-month-old Oliver from Ashford, who died 3 years ago.
Kent Online reports.
Work on a controversial one-way system in Canterbury that's been branded absolutely ridiculous has stalled again. The redesign on the A28 in Wincheap is still waiting to be rolled out after being delayed twice since 2022. Bosses say it will considerably ease congestion in the area, while critics say it's illogical and won't work. A controversial new slip road on the A299, meantime, which will take traffic through to a new estate, is set to open by the end of the year. The changes will see a new dual carriageway run through the Strode Farm development in Herne Bay. And plans have been unveiled to build a solar farm the size of 78 football pitches on farmland near Canterbury. Green energy firm Renewable Connections has announced it's investigating the potential for a solar farm and energy storage facility near Tyler's Hill. It could provide enough power for more than 15,000 homes. Next today, and a circus performer left paralysed after breaking her back is going to be performing in Kent this week. Silka Pan fell from a trapeze in 2007 and spent 7 months in hospital. After initially taking up parasports, she's now able to perform acrobat tricks again. Kate's been speaking to her.
My act, it's a celebration of life for me. It's a testament of the power of the human spirit to overcome adversity. And I do handstands on a podium. I use canes on which I do one arm handstands. I climb on bricks. I walk on stilts. So technically that it is that I and it's just a special hand balance technique because I cannot use my legs, so my legs are attached to that stick which is on my neck, and it's everything is made with the force, with the strength that I have in my shoulders and my upper body. So technically it's that. And I hope to be capable to express also grace with my act, and I work hard on that. Not to be pitied. So I don't want to show an act of a disabled woman. I want to show an act which is beautiful and which gives a message of hope.
The Gravity Circus is at Rochester's Jackson's Field from Wednesday.
Kent Online News.
Health bosses are concerned about a fall in flu vaccine uptake across the southeast. Only 44% of under 65s with long-term health conditions have had the jab, and only 30% of pregnant women. The Get Winter Strong campaign launches next month, reminding people to get their vaccinations. Now, a Kent village is split over plans for a 16-home development, which includes a school drop-off point next to a road with so-called nightmare parking. The houses could be built next to Holywell Primary School on Forge Lane in Upchurch, but neighbours say it will only increase congestion. A consultation on the development closes next month. Meantime, an independent special needs school has taken over a 19th century mansion in Maidstone. Serenity School enrolled its first 35 students at Springfield House earlier this month. There's capacity for 150, aged from 5 to 18. A florist who's been trading in Swanley for more than 60 years is closing after rising costs made it impossible to continue. This is a story we've heard quite regularly in episodes of the podcast. Michelle Avery has worked at Flowerworks since she was 15 and actually took over the store in 2011. She says they've never fully recovered to the pandemic and has been speaking to our reporter, Charlotte Phillips.
Obviously, things then, obviously Brexit, you know, with like anything, fresh produce, fruit and veg, flowers, everything then comes, obviously, has come via passports, and obviously that was more costly. Then obviously that's when prices started rising then. Obviously, we all kind of overcome that one. It was hard, but we all overcome it. And then obviously COVID, I mean, a lot of florist shops or businesses went down and they never did recover. I mean, we never did fully recover. It was just sort of making ends meet, basically. It's just gone on from there.
Yeah, so was kind of materials, did that rise in cost?
Everything regarding it, but not, it wasn't just flowers, it was the sundries, anything we needed to get. I suppose it's like anything with parts, like motor trading with parts and that. It was just trying to get anything through was like colossal prices as well. So it wasn't just the flower prices, it was everything you'd done, even down to your ribbons, to your spray paints, your wires, you know, anything was just, it couldn't get it, or it was just so expensive.
Yeah, what about kind of things like rent, electricity, that kind of stuff? Did you that?
As they're obviously always still rising, and they're obviously currently rising now. Obviously, then we add the fuel thing as well with the obviously the cost of like heating and stuff. Again, most of our flowers come via abroad, like Holland. My majority of my stuff come from, obviously, to heat the greenhouses and things like that. was more costly for them, again, that put the prices up.
Yeah, so what was the kind of final straw that made you make the kind of decision?
Basically, I didn't want to do it because obviously I've got three girls currently with me as well. And it was trying to keep everyone in a job. I had to cut down hours. I'd cut down days to start with, and then it was then cutting down the working days. So I was finishing at 4 rather than 5, which helped a little bit. But just still wasn't really, I was getting myself into deeper and deeper. I've used all my savings I did have has gone into the business just to keep me afloat. And I had to make that decision as much as I didn't want to. And it still kills me now that I'm not working because I've always done it.
And do you know what's kind of in the store for your future? Are you still going to do forestry? I'm assuming you love it.
I've been enjoying having my granddaughter for a couple of days a week, so that's been nice. She's kept me going, really. But yeah, I'm not going to say it. I'll never go back to it. But at the moment, no, I just feel that it's hard to go back, I think.
Bosses at a Kent pub that once appeared on TV show Bargain Hunt have put the property on the market. Ales and Antiques in Tankerton High Street is a popular micro pub that has an antiques showroom at the back. The owners are now retiring and say it's up for sale for just over £500,000. Meantime, the landlord of a pub between Faversham and Canterbury is warning that planned roadworks could kill trade. SGN are planning to dig up part of Staple Street in Herne Hill from early November. Bosses at the Three Horseshoes say it comes at a crucial time. They've asked the company to delay the work until after the festive season, but SGN say there'll be no change to their schedule. And Kent's JB Gill has survived the first round of voting on Strictly. The JLS star, who owns a farm here in the county, performed a cha-cha with pro partner Amy Dowden at the weekend. Olympic swimmer Tom Dean was eliminated after losing the dance-off to singer and actress Toya Wilcox.
Kent Online Sports.
Football, and Gillingham are top of League Two after another win at the weekend. They beat fellow promotion hopefuls Barrow 2-0 at Priestfield. Jaden Clark and Robbie McKenzie scoring the goals for the home side. Well, here's manager Mark Bonner, who spoke to us after the final whistle.
I just thought the game was average, and I thought we were pretty average as well. It was enough today to win, but if we want to stay where we are and we want to keep being a team that wins, we can do better than that, no question about it. Yeah, I think everybody would know, and our players definitely know, there's more in us than that. We didn't play enough, we didn't pass the ball well enough. We created our own pressure on our goal in certain situations. So, yeah, miles more to come from us, which is good. We've said that all the time. We can learn lessons in games where we're winning, then we'll take that. Probably needed to go on and be better in the second half. And for the first period, they were the team that were on top. We didn't want the game to look like that. But fair play to them. They made it more like they wanted it to look than we wanted it to look. That's the battle. But we still came out on top in it, which is an important skill. I didn't really like how we closed the game out. I thought we gave them too much of the ball, really, and we could have been a little bit more aggressive. I think we could go and score the next goal in that game. We're not playing with 10 men away from home or at home, and we're on the ropes. The start to the second half is just us not winning a first contact, us making a foul, us shanking a ball and then giving away a free kick. It's just like we've caused our own problems against them. So miles more to come, miles better to come from us. We were able to get some players on the pitch, which was good, and change things around a little bit. And understandably, the second goal is a big one in that game. And the context of the game does change. You do get a little bit deeper and you keep them in front. And I get that. That's fine. There'll be plenty of games like that. But actually, I didn't think it took too much of a dissimilar twist to lots of the other ones. We just lacked a little bit of the intensity that we needed, probably because we ran ourselves into the ground first half, making it a game it didn't need to be. But we're fine, we're happy, we'll take it, and we'll crack on and get ready for the next one.
Man of the match, Armani Little, agrees there's plenty more to come from the squad.
We started the game strong in the first half, and then we grew into the game a bit more, and then the goal relieved a bit of pressure, and we went 1-0 up, and I think at that time the game in the first half, I think we need to calm down a bit and dictate the game more, definitely. So that's things we can work on for the next game. We didn't come out strong at all second half. We come out a bit sloppy first 10-15 minutes, but the goal came at a good time again, and sort of goals change game, so that certainly went in our favour there. And I think after that we went 2-0. I think we were under no real threat, to be honest, and we kept the ball when we needed to, but I still think we can punish teams even more.
On to cricket, and Kent's final championship game of the season against Durham ended in a draw. The match was heavily affected by rain. Kent already knew that they'd been relegated from Division 1. And finally, in ice hockey, Kent's Invicta Dynamos have secured their first home win of the season. It was a 6-1 victory over Swindon Wildcats 2 in the South Division 1 yesterday evening. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.